أشهد أن محمد رسول الله أشهد أن محمد
السلام عليكم and welcome to Islam in Focus. This is the 45th on the series Sources of Islam, and to be more specific, it's the 5th on the arrangement of the Quran. I am your host, Rashad Nimish, and with me is Dr. Jamal Bhattali from St. Mary's University. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamal.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Dr. Jamal, could we please start off with a summary of last week's show?
Sure. After we discussed some of the theories of some of the Orientalists about the arrangement of the Quran, which was just one program before that, and indicating why these theories are erroneous, we moved in the last program to discuss some of the attempts that were made by some scholars to try and reflect on the divine wisdom behind the arrangement that we have in the Quran today, indicating that none of them really claim to have the last word on the subject. But some of the interesting remarks were discussed, especially those offered by the famous scholar of the Quran, Jalal al-Din al-Suyuti of the 15th century of the Common Era. More specifically, we examined why did the Quran start with this very short chapter, the opening chapter, followed by substantially longer chapters, and why that opening chapter actually captures in a very few verses the essence of Islam. We also discussed how that first chapter relates to the second and much longer chapter, number two, indicating again that basically the second chapter was an elaboration on this very concise first chapter, giving some details about the teachings in the Quran. We noted that the same kind of connection existed between the second and third chapters, which are more or less like cognate chapters connected in meaning. And finally, we noted that sometimes the connection between the chapters in the Quran is not only between, let's say, one chapter and the others, one and two, or two and three, but in some cases, in a number of chapters, you might find some connection, like two related to three, related to four also. We have seen some example of that in the previous program.
I see. Now, this connection you mentioned between the chapters, is it also there beyond the fourth chapter?
Yes, indeed. Actually, that the book that was referred to earlier by Jalal al-Din al-Suyuti about the secrets of the arrangement of the Quran, his reflections on it, covers all 142 chapters.
Right.
He goes in some detail. Mm. But here is some chapter that, some charts that might help us perhaps put some of these points together. For example, you notice here that in the first box there, which is actually the contents of chapters 2 in the Quran, you find that it deals to some extent with diet. I wrote there B means briefly, because it's elaborated later on in chapter 5. In verse 178, we find that it deals also with the penalty for premeditated murder. Okay? Moving on to the next box, you notice that, for example, it deals with another aspect of killing or murder, that is the penalty for involuntary manslaughter. That's in verse 92. Mm-hmm. Again, you notice here there's a sort of connection between these two boxes, between the, you know, chapter 2 and the next box, chapter 3, in a sense that both of them deal with heavily, actually, with various aspects of belief. Underneath the boxes, you might notice, for example, the first one focus a great deal on the question of faith, history, especially history of, you know, religious development of different nations and peoples. The same thing is emphasized in the second, in the third chapter, I should say, that's the second box, history also, the new order, that is the new Muslim community, as the heirs of the prophethood and spiritual message that were brought forth, was brought forth by previous prophets. Now, if we move a little bit from that to the third box here, the first one on the left-hand side represents chapter 4, and the last one represents chapter 5. You notice here that there is a lion that is coming on the top, which is coming all the way from chapter 2, in which, as indicated earlier, chapter 2 dealt, but in a very brief way, with the question of diet or dietary laws. But again, we find that the same topic has been covered in chapter 5, but we have the word here, D, for detailed, in much greater detail. Actually, the name of the chapter, that's 5, is Al-Ma'idah, or like the table spread. On the other hand, you find that chapter 4, for example, deals with the contracts, varieties of contracts, marriage and so on. Chapter 5 begins, in fact, with the verse that says, O you who believe, fulfill your contracts. So it seemed like a very beautiful and nice one. That's the very first verse in chapter 5. You notice also that there are various other laws, especially dealing with criminals, that people who are like professional killers, or people who really, not just a premeditated murder in a sense of anger, but people who really raid others, bandits and so on. And again, that seemed to be a nice flow again from earlier chapters, which one of which mentioned deliberate premeditated murder, the second one dealt with the penalty of involuntary manslaughter, 4 deals with the question of deliberate criminal acts. Both of these chapters, 4 and 5, as you notice, deal with some aspects of application of faith in life. As you notice under the boxes, on the one on the left-hand side, it deals largely with social problems, particularly family laws and family organization, right? The fifth chapter deals with how the Muslim community, the emerging Muslim community, should avoid backsliding into the same difficulties and errors that took place in the past. Now, getting to the chapter 6, as you notice from the number on top of the box, we find that while the fifth chapter, the last line in the fifth chapter in the box just on top of that, it says that it ends, that is, chapter 5 ends by stating that to Allah, that is God, capital G, belongs everything, the domain of heavens and earth. Chapter 6, however, goes into much greater detail of what that last verse in chapter 5 stated. It describes the creation of Allah, creation of heavens and earth and everything in between them, creation of the humans, animals, birds, creation of life and death, sleep and rain, stars. It goes into greater detail as if it is a logical, you know, flow from what has been stated before. Another aspect that is noted underneath the box there, that a great deal of emphasis, besides detailing the creation of God or Allah, is to speak very strongly about monotheism, that this creation carry, if we really observe them carefully, a clear evidence, manifestation of the existence, omnipotence and mercy of the Creator. Moving on to chapter 7, which is just on the left hand, on the yes, on the left hand side or on the right hand side of the screen, that deals with prophethood, and this is a very befitting topic since 6 deal with monotheism, and of course you cannot learn much about monotheism unless this information is communicated through prophets that has been sent by God. This 7 constitute more or less like a constant flow. However, if we move on to the next 2 boxes, for example, you find that 2 chapters, also 8 and 9, are very much interrelated. While the previous one dealt with belief, this one again comes back to action or application. Some real-life problems of Muslims, especially in the early days. Chapter 8, for example, dealt with the defense of the new order or the Muslim community. EXT stands for external, that is against external attacks by the pagans, for example, and their allies. Chapter 9 continues to deal basically with the same question of defense also of the community, but this time mainly internally, that is defense against internal treason and treachery that tried to destroy the new order from within.
I see. Well, Dr. Jamal, the previous chart seems to indicate that various chapters of the Quran are divided into groups. Mm-hmm. Now, has there been any attempt to study the Quran in this manner?
Okay. While the Quran itself, the official copies that we have in our hands of the Quran, of course, do not have a particular grouping as such, but you're right. Many scholars have tried their best to try and see whether there is some sort of connection between some groups of chapters. Perhaps by referring again to a couple of charts, we might be able to illustrate this point in perhaps an easy to follow way. For example, in the previous charts, we dealt with chapters from 1 up to 9. It is noted here by some scholars, especially Yusuf Ali, the famous translator of the meaning of the Quran, whose translation is quite popular, especially in North America and Europe. Some of his observations that chapters 10 through 16 seem to deal largely with issues pertaining to the question of revelation, the truthfulness of Prophet Muhammad as the emissary or messenger of God, the role of the Quran that was sent with him, and trying to provide some proofs of the truthfulness of his claim that he is the messenger or prophet of God. Now, you notice that in the next group, that is chapters 17 through 21, it was noted that most of the emphasis in these chapters dealt with the spiritual developments of individuals, especially in reference to prophets. For example, 17 dealt with the ninth journey and ascension of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, as again a symbol of spiritual purification. For example, chapters 18 dealt with the story of the people of the cave. 19 is called Mary, that deals with the story of Prophet Jesus and his mother, peace be upon him. Chapter 20 deals with the story of Prophet Moses. Chapter 21 deals with the story of stories of other prophets in general. I should add here that one interesting observation that was made by Jalaluddin Asyuti is that if you compare, for example, two chapters in this group, 18 and 19, you will notice that chapter 18, known as the cave, deals or mentions two important miracles. One is the story of the people of the cave, known as the seven sleepers, and the other is an strange story also about an encounter between Moses and another holy man. The Quran, you know, mentioned that. In chapter 19, it deals with two other amazing and strange incidents also, miracles. One is the miracle of the birth of Prophet Yahya, or John the Baptist, even though his parents were very old and his mother was barren. And secondly, the miraculous birth also of Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, from a virgin, that's from Virgin Mary. So that's another interesting connection also, not only within the group of the chapters, but sometimes even between two related chapters. If we return back to the same chart, we find that in the other books you have, for example, chapters 22 through 25 still deal with the issue of individual spirituality, making some emphasis on the spiritual growth of individuals through various acts of piety and worship, like prayers, pilgrimage. Chastity has been emphasized in more than one surah in this. The next group, 26 through 29, deals with the confrontation of those spiritually developed individuals, particularly developed individuals, i.e. the prophets, and how the various societies and communities reacted to their message by denial and rejection. and how they treated those prophets. So there seems to be some common theme in this group of chapters. Continuing to the next box, that is chapters 30 through 32, you find that the emphasis now shifts to some of the various mysteries of creation, indicating that after all, truth shall prevail, which might have been a lesson also, or a sort of assurance to the believers in the days of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, at any other time where they have similar circumstances, that even though they might be oppressed at one time or the other, that ultimately the truth will prevail. Chapter 33 indeed seemed to be a logical continuation of this group of chapters, because it does not just talk about mysteries or general principles, but like the Quran does frequently, it talks about general things, beliefs, and then it comes to application. It talks about prophecies, it comes to fulfillment, to actual incidents or happening in the life of the Muslim community. The emphasis in chapter 33, which is, by the way, is called the Confederates, describes how Muslims were victorious against the conspiracy to suppress their faith and the alliance that combined many of their oppositions together in one great confederate to try to suppress and destroy Muslims. That again talks about the miracle of victory that took place against all the odds. Continuing to the next box, for example, verses chapters 34 through 39, you find that the major emphasis again is dealing with the struggle between right and wrong, truth and falsehood, giving stories and narratives from various nations, basically trying to make the point that nations in the past, no matter how strong and powerful or rich they might have been, could not continue to prosper when they rejected the spirituality and rejected God. So it keeps reminding people with God and the destiny and the hereafter and how the evil should be overcome. And then finally, at least for that sheet, the last box, chapters 40 through 46, these seven chapters, interestingly enough, all of them begin with the broken letters Hameem, which again shows that the order is not just a sort of haphazard like some Orientalists assumed. All of them, that's why it is known as Al-Hawameem, or the seven chapter that begin with a similar kind of initial. All of these chapters, the seven, deal with the notion of belief and rejection of truth, with the victory of truth, indicating that nothing really will stand in the path of truth, no matter how powerful it may be. To continue with the same line of analysis in the following chart, first, for the group of verses, chapters or surahs 47 through 49, we find that the major emphasis there is on the social organization of the Muslim community, both internally and externally. That is, in terms of its relationship with others, that is, the defense of this emerging community, as well as the internal etiquette or character or moral behavior, especially as reflected in chapter 49, which deals a lot with the question of etiquette and respect for each other and dealing among believers. The next box, 50 through 56, deals largely with eschatology, or to use a simpler term, the future of what will happen after this life is done with, underlining the importance of the Quran in bringing about spiritual awakening, the role of belief in the hereafter in shaping the direction of the lives of the people. I may add a comment here that with the end of these chapters, that is up to 56, this covers more or less about 90% of the Quran. not 90% of the number of chapters, because some chapters are very long, some are very short, but in terms of the total volume of the Quran, that covers up to about 90%. To move on to the next box, for the group of chapters from 57 to 66, you find that largely they deal with what you might call special aspect or special problem in the new order. By new order here, again, we refer to the new believing community, the Muslims that are supposed to be the heirs of the spiritual message that was delivered by previous prophets prior to the advent of the last prophet, Muhammad, peace be upon him. Some of the chapters might emphasize one aspect or the other, but all of them really deal with aspects of spiritual development, family, organization, facing the enemies and conspirators, dealing with hypocrites within the community itself, and so on. And finally, from 67 to 114, you find chapters which are largely very, very short, with a very, as Yusuf Ali calls it, mystic beauty, describing the rise and fall of nations, various lessons for people. These were mainly Makki surahs revealed in the early days of Islam, ending finally with the last three chapters, 112, 13, and 14. 112 reiterates the principle of monotheism and absolute oneness and uniqueness of Allah, God the Creator, and end with the 113 and 114, which is basically a sort of prayer, just like the Quran started with a prayer, beautiful prayer. It ends again with a prayer seeking refuge in Allah from all evils, whether those evils are evils of satanic forces or other human beings. I should say that this is just a sort of a very quick and brief answer to your question, in the sense of grouping of the surahs. But even within each of these groups, you can spend a lot of time actually analyzing even connection between various chapters or surahs.
Now that's very informative. Dr. Jamal, the last category you mentioned, that is the last chapter, mm-hmm. Well, contains a lot of chapters.
Yeah, almost about 48, perhaps, short ones.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Now, can you give us a few examples of how specifically do some of these chapters relate, to see if there may be any reason behind the way that they're arranged?
Okay. If we were to examine just the connection within the group itself, perhaps you can refer to this last chart that we have here. Just taking the last 10 chapters, very brief chapters in the Quran, they start all the way from the upper corner of the left, on the left-hand side, that is 105, known as the elephant, or the dealing with the story of how the ruler of Ethiopia at that time, Abraha, brought an army with elephants to try and destroy the holy shrine, the Kaaba. That it was even before Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, started his mission. It was the same year when Prophet Muhammad was born, about 570 in the common era. So basically, the 105 remind the people of Quraysh, the tribe of the Prophet, that it was God or Allah alone who protected that holy shrine, the Kaaba. If you move on to 106, which is the next one, known as the Surah of Quraysh, actually the beginning of that surah seemed to indicate that it is a perfect connection and flow from the previous one. As if it says, لِإِلَافِ قُرَيْشِ, that God has saved the sanctuary that was very much revealed even by Quraysh before Islam, in order that they may be thankful to Allah. So the kind of flow of topic or meaning seem to connect very nicely. And actually that very surah, 106, ends by indicating that it was Allah only who provided the security for the Quraysh and provided provision or food for them after hunger. Okay? If you move to 107, you find that it is again a continuation, because in that chapter 107 we find that there is a condemnation of those who are not grateful for the blessing that Allah has given. For example, condemning those who refuse to give food to those who are hungry or in need. Okay? 108, known as Al-Kawthar, we find that it makes a contrast, a beautiful contrast with the surahs before.
Mm-hmm.
Because the surah before described those who are ungrateful to the blessing of Allah and are not helpful to others. Whereas 108 deals with the blessings that Allah has given to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, which are the opposite of those negative characteristics. For example, it says that Allah has given Prophet Muhammad a great deal of blessings, which is against, of course, miserliness. It ordains him to pray, whereas in the previous surah, it talks about people who are not prayerful, they don't fulfill their prayers. It says, pray to your Lord, which means be sincere in all your worship and action, whereas in the previous surah, it condemns those who are show-off and they just do that, you know, not for the sake of Allah, but for other reasons. It addresses the Prophet that he should slaughter the animals and provide, you know, meat for the poor and needy, whereas the previous chapter speaks about those yamna'un al-ma'un, those who are refused to give charity or help to others. In 109, we find again that while the previous chapter 108 emphasized that prayers and action should be only for the sake of the Creator, in 109 it emphasizes again that it is only Allah who is worthy of worship and that there should be no compromise on that. 110, it talks about the reward. You see, because 109 is a sort of purifying oneself from worshipping other than Allah. As a result of that, 110 speaks about the reward for that sincerity, and that is called an-nas, that is the victory. The 7th, the 111, which comes after that, it talks about the contrast. As it talks about the reward in 110, it talks about the punishment for those who deviated from the path of Allah, more specifically the punishment for Abu Lahab, one of the uncles of the Prophet who was unbeliever. And then finally, you notice that the last remaining chapters, 1, 12, 13, and 14, as indicated at the end of the previous question, that the 112 reiterates the most important aspect of monotheism in Islam, that Allah begets not, nor was he begotten, and there is nothing comparable or similar to him. 13 and 14, as indicated again, is the prayer for seeking refuge from all evils, whether they come from humans or any other sources. So even if you take this as a sort of unit, and I'm just dealing with the last 10 because of the limitation of the time, but as indicated earlier in the book written by Suyuti, he goes through each and every chapter in the Quran, and it's really a kind of interesting type of analysis, even though again we say that that's his best judgment. We cannot say that this is the only way of looking at it.
Well, just if you've run out of time again, we thank Dr. Badawi for sharing his knowledge with us and hope to see all of you back here next week at Islam in Focus. From all of us, assalamu alaikum.
أشهد أن محمد رسول